from the number one best-selling author of Life Rescripted. You're now tuning in to the Year of Purpose podcast. I'm Zephan Moses Blacksburg. Ryan Stueman has a 50th degree black belt in sales. He can sell in person, on the phone, from the stage, through text, email, on video, and before long, in a hologram. He's had three bestsellers and runs a sales blog that people love at hardcorecloser.com. Ryan, thanks for being here today.
Man, just hearing you say that's got me all fired up today, Zephan. You know, like, I'm starting to think, man, oh, shoot, he's talking about me. Like, and all pumped up and everything. So I'm excited to be here, man.
Thanks for being here. You know, we talk about so many different things on the podcast, everything from, you know, how people have built their successful businesses to just where they've gone in their lives and in the world. I'd love to hear just kind of a quick backstory. You know, I know you're great at selling, you're great at running a business. How does one get to that point? Did you like work as a car salesman for like 30 years and just got really good at it? How did that all play out when you were growing up?
Sort of, actually. You're not far off. I actually sold car washes. So like how it works is, you know, you have a car wash, people pull in the front, they want a $5 wash. It was my job to sell them like a $10 wash, right? Gotcha. And, you know, the car wash was in downtown Dallas, like literally it's less than a mile up the street from, I can see it out the window of my apartment now. And so I haven't fallen too far from the tree, in other words. But, you know, the car wash was really busy at the time. It was like one of the only ones in Dallas. So we would wash 1,000, sometimes 1,400 cars on a Saturday. And, you know, 1,400 chances, I was the only person that talked to everybody that came through there when they would buy car washes. So, I got like 100 turns an hour sometimes, you know, 100 different sales pitches. And I did that all the way from the time I was like 13. I did it part time. I dropped out of school when I was 17 and went to do it full time. And then I left the car wash business when I was 23. So I did that for a long time every day, you know, selling people car washes right there on the lot as they came in. And basically, it's like inbound leads, which is my specialty, right? People coming in, they already have a desire for what it is that you sell, and then you selling more of it than they expected to already buy. And that's what how I got started, actually, because of me working at the car wash. Somebody offered me a job in the mortgage industry in 2003, and I ended up leaving the car wash for obvious reasons to go work in the mortgage business. This is like the once in a lifetime chance to go do mortgages. I could always got my job back at the car wash, you know right. What I mean? Yeah. And I became really good and prolific in mortgages as well, became one of the best mortgage originators in the country. And was featured in a lot of different articles and stuff like that and did a lot of high volume. And I left that business in 2010 due to some government legislation BS. And so from there, I started this hardcore closer training thing. And, you know, it looks all glorious and everything these days. But, you know, we had to build it one brick at a time, just like anything else.
Definitely. And I'm sure that there were many steps in the process, much like when you were working at the car wash. You know, you had a lot of chances to not only try, to fail, to alter what you were doing, to test out different stuff. I mean, I can only imagine when you get that many chances to test out your sales pitch, you eventually get pretty darn good at it. And there's just no question of whether or not they're going to buy.
Well, yeah, I realized that I would get my sales pitch down. I had it down so good that I didn't even have to be like, you know, quote unquote present to make it happen. I could talk to two or three cars at once out there on the lot using my hands. And like, I just got really good at it. Just became kind of autonomous. And, you know, even now I'm the same way. You know, I just, when I get on the phone with somebody, I've heard the same excuses, objections, and needs so many times. It's kind of like a autonomous for me. But, you know, not too many people get a chance to close, you know, 30,000 or so sales before they actually go into a real professional sales environment, you know, and right. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that.
Right. Well, let's jump back to real quick, you know, when you were working that job, what was failure like for you? I mean, did you very quickly learn how to, you know, just guarantee that you're going to upsell them into a better package every time? I mean, it sounds you're saying that you could just basically sell multiple cars at once. Like, how did you even learn to do that? You know, how did you know what to change when you were making that offer?
Well, you know, the truth is, so I was a young guy when I started there, and I had a lot of energy. And the managers always held me to a different standard than everybody else. Because let's just set the pace of like how a car wash is, right? It's a bunch of losers that didn't get their life together for the most part that are making minimum wage, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's not losers that convicted felons and stuff like that, then it's usually people, you know, that have – immigrated here from another country, and this is their starting point, right? Like no one wakes up one day and goes, you know what, Dad, when I grow up, I'm gonna work at a car wash, right? That's nobody's dream. So, you know, it's a bunch of guys that you really can't boss around. You know what I mean? They're you know, it's a rough crowd there washing cars, and it's a tough job. And me being a kid, they held me to a different standard because they could boss me around. They could make me do more than everybody else because I'm just a kid, you know. And, you know, that's just how it is, the law of the pecking order or whatever. Well, they rode me obviously a lot harder than everybody else. But I didn't know that at the time. I look back and see how it went down. But at the time, I just thought, you know, that's, I was just supposed to work that hard all the time. And, you know, thank God they did because, you know, they instilled a really hard, them being assholes to me really instilled a really hard work ethic into me. And, you know, like to where I was literally 10 hours a day, I wasn't allowed to like be still. I had to be picking up trash. I'd be taking out trash. I had to, you know, do all these other things on top of selling cars and washing cars and all this other stuff. So, cause you know, some days it's slow and you're doing 5 cars an hour and you know, that only takes about 10 minutes a car. And if they all come in at the same time, 15 minutes later, you got 45 minutes of nothing to do. And so they kept me busy so that I probably didn't bug them to be, you know, just thinking about it.
I gotcha. Well, so when time ultimately came, you got to shift into a new position. How were you able to recognize that, you know, taking this next big step would be huge for you and knowing that it was worth it to take that leap?
Well, you know, the lady, she's passed now, but the lady Monica that offered me the first job in the mortgage world, I told her, I was like, you know, hey, you know, I don't even have a truck payment or a credit card. How am I going to, I've never been inside a bank other than to cash a check. Like, how am I going to do people's mortgages? And she said, hey, you don't worry. You didn't know how to wash cars at one point either. So I'll teach you how to do mortgages. And I thought, okay, that's really cool. This lady doesn't know who I really am. And you know, we all have that like self-doubt in ourselves, right? Like, oh, well, you know, they think that I'm this person, but I'm not. And I shouldn't say that we all, but you know, I thought this person saw something in me that I obviously didn't see in myself at the time. And the next couple of days, the owner of the car wash showed up, and I probably hadn't seen that guy in 5 years. And the first thing he did when he showed up was he started, like, you know, kind of talking bad to me. And and I remember thinking, you know, the car wash that I was at, I was at the time the manager, and I was like, I had turned this thing around from being last place car wash to being first place car wash in the chain. And, you know, had built up really good clientele, had, you know, cleaned everything up and really taken well care of the place. And for him to just show up in a bad mood, it just pissed me off. So I threw my keys at him and I said, you know what, I'm going to go be a banker, damn it. And I wasn't sure what that meant. You know what I mean? I'm like, hey, you know, like it's better than washing cars, right? Like what's the worst thing that can happen? I wind up making minimum wage. That's what I'm making here anyway. So who cares? And so actually once I went to work a couple of days later, I remember, people laughing at me because I showed up dressed like like you're gonna go to work at a car wash. I didn't have any banker clothes, you know, and I showed up wearing boots and jeans and a nice button up shirt. I did have a nice button up shirt on, but it was nice at the time. I probably wouldn't be caught dead wearing that ensemble these days. But within a couple of days, like as luck would have it, Zephan, I was sitting over at a longtime friend of mine's house, and his parents. Well, it was actually at his parents' house, and his parents. We're talking about something, and we were watching the Ohio State game, and I said, you know what? You guys have lived in this house for a really long time. Have y'all ever refinanced? And they said, you know, we were thinking about doing that for Christmas, and they had some XYZ conversation. Well, I told them, I was like, hey, I just got this job at the bank. I don't know how it works, but one of the people there can definitely hook you up, and I'll make sure they take good care of you guys. Well, like 30 days later, the lady that was training me how to do the process, she gave me a check for like $6,800.
Wow.
Yeah, I had refinanced their house, and she had walked me through the process and stuff. And as soon as I saw, like, I left a car wash where I made, you know, $700 a week after it was all said and done. And to get $6,800 for 30 days worth of work, dude, I was hooked. Like, I knew I was going to be the next Donald Trump, man. I was going to be a billionaire, real estate mogul. And this is before he was a politician, right? Like, I knew it. Like, I read every one of his books. I started reading all these books about other, like, real estate moguls. And I, like, knew that I was going to be the king of banking, man. Like, with my $6,800 or whatever it was.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I feel like, even most athletes do this as they kind of envision what it's going to look like when they do hit that success. Even, the big weightlifters, before they go up for a big lift, they kind of have a picture in their mind of what it looks and feels like to have that. And I think it's awesome because there's a lot of people that tune into the podcast that are either, first-time entrepreneurs or maybe considering entrepreneurship for the first time. And, some of them either just got that, $6,800 check or, that just that first check or that first dollar. And it means the world to them. And I'm sure it really pumps up, a lot of your self-esteem when it comes to trying something new you haven't done before.
Yeah, and here's if you're new to the entrepreneur world, look, it's scary, right? When I threw my keys at the owner, I wasn't thinking, I wasn't thinking, dude, I got this, right? I'm just gonna go out here and ball out like Donald Trump in the banking world, right? Like, that wasn't the thought. As soon as the keys left my hand, it was like, oh shoot, man, I hope I made the right decision, right? Just like everybody else. But now, in retrospect, as a person who's educated now and a person who's been in the business for, that was 2003. So I've been doing this for, 13 years at this point, in one form or another, in one entrepreneurial form or another. And if you think about it, it's like, I look back now and I'm like, how foolish was I not to take that risk? I mean, you could always get a job back making, you can get a job anywhere, right? If you got one job, you can get another one. If your last boss liked you, your next boss, should you choose to have one, will like you too, right? That's a given. But you don't always, but you can go get a job. So why not take a risk first, right? You're taking a risk in getting a job that you're salary capped or that you're stuck under somebody else. And look, even as a salesperson that worked on commission only, I've had people screw me over. And most people that are listening to this, if they've been in sales or any kind of entrepreneurialism or collected accounts for any point in time, people have not paid them or people have underpaid them or people have underappreciated them, right? So that's going to happen. You take risk on that end. And even when you have a boss, right? Sometimes you miss out on things from a corporate structure, or if they decide to fire you, they can just fire you, right? But so you're taking a risk anyway. So you might as well build your own. And honestly, I worked for several different corporations over the years, like the mortgage bank and stuff. And I finally got fed up with it because in 2010, there was a law here in the country, America, passed that was called Dodd-Frank. And basically, one of the caveats of Dodd-Frank was, when the mortgage meltdown happened in 2008, a lot of people in the banking business were convicted of like mortgage fraud and stuff. And sadly, it wasn't the CEOs and the underwriters of these banks, it was the sales guys, which is exact opposite of what should have happened. But they were the fall guys, basically. Well, they wanted to make sure that those guys didn't come back and avenge the CEOs that snitched on them. Like, that's just tell the truth, right? And they didn't want those guys to be able to come back and avenge them. So they put something in the Dodd-Frank bill that basically said if you have a crime of moral turpitude, which mortgage fraud is, or thieving or anything like that, drug dealing, that kind of stuff, then you aren't allowed to get your license for 7 years after the fact. So they were betting on the guys that got in trouble in 08 and 09 not being able to come back until 2019. And then by then, or 2017, but by then, who cared? You know what I mean? Like, they already found another career by then. Well, me, when I was 19, I told you I dropped out of school at age 17. When I was 19, I tried cocaine for the first time and only time in my life. And I overdosed from it and died from it and ended up catching a drug charge. And I was selling drugs, and that's what they charged me with, and rightfully so. And so I have this crime of moral turpitude right now. It happened in 1999, but at this point, it was 2010. And they had just instilled that, and I didn't get off of like probation and stuff until like say 2005. So I was still a few years from my 7 year mark, right? And they wouldn't renew my license, even though I had one from before being a felon this whole time. No complaints, nothing wrong in the mortgage business. The mortgage licensing bureau that they created with this Dodd-Frank Act decided not to give me a license through the federal deal, and then the Texas one was expiring. So I was in the, like a catch 22 situation. Well, I went to the company I worked for. I was their top producer. I made them a whole bunch of money, everything else. And I went to the CEO and the HR person. I said, can we get a lawyer and fix this? And they were like, I think that you're gonna have to get your own lawyer. And I was like, they really don't care about me.
Wow.
Like, they really don't. And then what made it even worse is like a couple of weeks later, I was in the process of buying a home when all this happened too. And I'm about to tell the story on a Facebook live stream when we're done with this, but I was in the middle of buying a house too. And the underwriter at the company that I worked for, that I was top producer, that I was making $300,000 a year, W-2 money, wrote down, they denied my loan because if the Dodd-Frank Act went into place and I didn't have my license, I wouldn't have continuing income. And so that showed me for sure that the corporation didn't plan on supporting me, because they weren't even going to loan me money after I had made them millions of dollars over the years. And so, you know, that really put me in a position to where I told myself, I was like, you know what, I'm done. I'm not going to work for anybody ever again, because every time I do, they're in control. I want to be in control of my situation. I want to be in control of my destiny. If somebody gets ripped off, I want it to be me by me. You know, if someone gets let down, if someone gets fired, I want it to be me by me. I don't want it to be, you know, in somebody else's control. And, you know, I have a struggle just like anybody else. It was another risk, just like leaving the car wash for the bank, but leaving a $300,000 a year income job for, hey, maybe this will work out, let's try it out, kind of an opportunity, is a completely different story, right? Especially 10 years later in life when you got some money saved up and stuff like that. So, and responsibilities. But, you know, after struggling for 4 years, the last 2 years have been really nice, to be honest with you. But the first four were fun, but I'll be damned if they weren't hard, you know?
Well, I think it just goes to show that you can work as hard as you want and do everything right and work for a company and think that it's secure and it can be pulled out from under you without you having done anything wrong.
Yep. Yeah, nothing had changed in my life since day one. You know what I mean? Like, they just, like, legislation is just like, you know, like guns or anything else. Like, they just keep tightening and tightening and tightening up, you know, till one day some people are squeezed out, and then they tighten it up in another 5 years and another class of people are squeezed out. And, you know, but, you know, it saved me, because I honestly believe, and shoot, I'm trying to be part of the solution, but I believe that the mortgage world is going to automation anyway. And we're doing some stuff in that area as well right now, trying to, you know, help the mortgage world be a lot easier to deal with. And so I think that it was just a way of saying, hey, get into this internet world and the software world that I'm in now versus, you know, staying in the banking world. But it did give me real world experience on, you know, how to get loans and how money works and, you know, how banks work and all that stuff. So I wouldn't have traded that experience for nothing. And it also backed me in a corner to where, you know, I had to once again make a decision to bet on myself or not. I could have went and got a job at another bank. Like at Bank of America, for example, they don't require you to have a license, right? You don't have to have a license to work for them. So I could have went and got a job somewhere else, but I just said, hey man, you know what? I'm going to bet on myself. And here's what happens, ladies and gentlemen, when you bet on yourself, subconsciously, right? Whether you realize it or not, subconsciously, your subconscious goes, he believes in us. He's got faith in us. He knows he can do it. And it starts pushing your front conscious to continue in the direction that you want, right? It's like, it's giving yourself karma bank of confidence, right? And when your subconscious goes, he believes in us so much that he took this huge risk, your subconscious, if you'll let it, will do everything in its power to make sure that you're successful, because it's like, I don't even know like the medical term for it, but there's a lot of dopamine going on because of the fact that you showed it, that you believe in yourself, because a lot of people don't believe in themselves, you know?
Yeah, that's a tough one, especially when you're leaving something that's so secure for the entrepreneurship world. You know, I feel like there was a big part of myself, I remember when I quit my job, that totally believed in what I was doing. And there was certainly a part of me that was like, I have no clue what I'm doing, and I have no clue if it's going to work. And, you know, I think that it's just a matter of kind of hanging on to that little voice that's saying that you can do it and you can pull it off, and you'd really be surprised what that does for you.
Yep. And then you know what? You look back 6 years later and you think yourself that you did it, and your subconscious thinks you too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so let's talk about, you know, just entrepreneurship in general requires creating sales, right? Like regardless of whether you're serving people and you have a service or you're selling a product, like everything is going to require sales in order for you to be able to make money and build and grow your business. What are some of the things that you've learned? You know, you were saying that the first 4 years were a little bumpy. The last 2 years have been great. You know, what are some of the lessons that you've learned just in building and growing a business on your own, you know, outside of working for a corporation?
You know, the first thing that I would do if I could do it all over again is I would build a team faster. That's been the one thing that's really allowed me to go to the next level, be on the level that we're on now and pushing towards the next one, is having a team in place. And, you know, having a sales team and having a management team and actually having a corporate structure. One of the biggest, and this will hit home with a lot of people listening if you've been in business for a while, especially if you're an independent person, one of the biggest factors and really what changed 4 years into it which has now been about a year and a half, really, when it's all said and done. I'm almost 6 years into this thing. And really, what happened was for 4 years, I did this by myself, and I had an assistant. And I got in this like stagnation world. I was making decent money by some stretch, but not what I wanted, and definitely not hitting my goals, but I wasn't growing. But about a year and a half ago, I started adding people to the team, salespeople and training them, management, and that's what really changed everything. I went through a divorce last year. It was finalized. My lawyer hits me up and he says, "Hey man, congratulations. You don't really have to give any equity in your company to your soon-to-be ex-wife." And at first, I was like, "Oh, that's awesome." But then I thought, "Well, what did you guys do, right?" Because lawyers are always up to some shenanigans. And he goes, "Well, we made your company valued at zero, so congratulations on that." I'm like, "What the hell? What do you mean my company's not worth anything? I've been building this thing for 4 years. We're doing $500,000 a year. What are you talking about?" And the guy goes on to say, "Well, if you were to get on your motorcycle tomorrow and you were to get run over and get killed, nobody's going to pay you next month." I'm like, "Oh man." Now all of a sudden this good news has turned into really shocking news, right? And because, I mean, it's not about who's going to take care of her. I have a son, and my ex still doesn't work, and that's okay. That's her decision. And she gets, child support and stuff like that from me. But at the same time, that's to take care of my son. So if something did happen to me, then, who's going to take care of my son? And so that was like a legacy thinking that I had to face. And so, fortunately, I live in the penthouse of one of the probably the most expensive at this point, it's the damn sure most expensive building in Dallas. They just raised our rent again. And my neighbor is a CPA, and he took a liking to me. Older gentleman took a liking to me. His last name's Stoner, so we instantly got along there. And so we just we got along really well, and he's helped me structure my business in a way that, in the event that, unfortunately, if I did get in a car accident or a motorcycle accident or fall off the balcony of the high rise we live on or whatever the hell happened, right? Like life happens sometimes. I believe I built at least a good enough foundation right now to where this business could run for the next 5 to 10 years without me.
That's awesome. And I think that's so important is a lot of people aren't really looking ahead to the future. They're just kind of staying where they are because it's nice and it's comfortable. And this is certainly something that I've been looking into doing recently myself is building out a team and really having it so that I always call like the UPS or the FedEx guy and say, if you don't have a back, if your back's not in good shape, if you're not in the gym strengthening it, if you can't lift boxes, then what good is your job? And it's right. There is no job if they don't have their health. And it's kind of the same thing. Your business isn't there if you haven't set it up so that, it can grow without you.
That's exactly right. And how much does that hurt everybody if it's selfish, right? You think about it, but how much does that hurt everybody if you do disappear? Because if you're in a prominent position and something happens to you, then you're letting down, yourself and everything else. So I think that you kind of owe it to your marketplace to put things in place that keep that from happening. In the event that, heaven forbid something happened to me, guess what? Most of our products that we sell are digital products, so people will still continue learning from them forever. And little shifts like that are what we made. Instead of me doing everything in person, we created some digital products, and we have a whole catalog of them at this point. And they're significantly less expensive than working with me personally, and we sell a whole lot more of them. And a lot of those people end up do working with me personally. But in the event, like I said, something happens, then we still have these e-learning programs to fall back on as well.
And I think it's super important to note that you have digital products, right? Like this is kind of the way that businesses are going, is there's so much opportunity out there for someone to take their knowledge and take what they've learned over the years and to build out something online that can sell itself. And I think that a lot of people kind of throw away the idea of doing anything online because it's just unfamiliar territory for them. And it looks like, this was probably something that was a totally new field for you before you even got into it. Is that right?
Oh man, I learned how to make info products because I bought an info product on how to make info products. I'm a member of this community too. One of the things that I'm probably going to post this in my sales group on Facebook later today, and I'm going to ask, who invests more than $25,000 a year into the personal development coaching and mentoring programs? And I guarantee you, everybody that says that they invest, that'll be millionaires.
Not that, not in the future. I'm talking about most of them that'll say that they're doing that are millionaires. And you might think, well, that's why they're millionaires. So they have the 25 grand laying around. And that's usually the exact opposite. They didn't have the 25 grand or whatever the case. And now they're millionaires. That's like me. You know, I've given money to Frank Kern, Kevin Nations, Russell Brunson, John Carlton, Harlan Kielstein, like you name them, like all the Ryan Dice, like, dude, I've worked with everybody at this point. And you know, and it's because of all them that I've got the education and been able to make these digital products. I've seen what worked well for them and what didn't work well from them. And you know, paying those guys and becoming a part of their different stuff's really changed a lot as well, just because you know, I get to see what I do and don't want inside of our programs.
Yeah, I certainly agree with, you know, investing money in yourself. So in the last 3 years, which have been the time at which I've been working for myself since I left my job, I worked a job until May of 2013. I've put about $25,000 into my own self-investment. So this is everything from, you know, life coaching to business coaching to learning about marketing, taking courses, retreats, everything to improve on myself. 25 grand over the last just 3 years. And for someone who's 26, I dare you to find somebody else out there who's that old and is spending that much money on improving themselves. You probably won't find it. But Ryan, I know that you've got a limited time left over here. I just want to give everybody just a quick nugget of advice as we're leaving the show, and then we're going to get to where they can learn more about you. What would be your number one tip for anyone right now who's either, you know, fresh off starting a business or really looking into diving into the deep end and starting a business in the next few months?
Take risk while you can. You know, if you're in a situation like what I've done is, you know, I've removed myself from ownership of everything to where I could take risk. Not until recently have I owned any like personal residence home. You know, I've flipped homes and stuff like that, but as investments. But I don't own cars. I don't own boats. I don't own anything, right? And because I want to be flexible and be able to take a risk, and so. You know, the best thing that I could tell you, the people out there listening, is just continue to take risk and make sure that you always keep yourself in a position of where you can take risk. You know, we probably should be buying $1 million house, maybe a $2 million house right now, but we're not because we want to put ourselves in a position where we can continue to take risk.
That's awesome. So I think taking risk is the big key takeaway from today. Ryan, it's been awesome to have you here. I know that your website is hardcorecloser.com. What are some things people should look out for on your website or go to check out next?
That I promise you, if you're into sales, that'll be the best website you will ever visit in your entire sales career. You will go there and you will read an article and you will fall in love and you will watch videos, and that thing is so diverse down so many different paths with so many different industries and topics and word tracks and scripts. I should be charging people money just to land on it. So if you're in sales and go to hardcorecloser.com, it'll blow your mind. It'll be the best site. I scour every day. I go out there. There's literally nothing that comes anywhere in comparison with that site. And I've designed it that way, right? I've put the time and effort into it to make it a resource for this community. And also, I'd ask you to connect with me on social media. You can find me at clyxo.com/closer. That's clyxo.com/closer. That has like all my social media and everything listed there. By the way, that's a pretty cool site. You should sign up for it too. It saves me from giving you 15 different social media places to find me, you know?
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for being here today. And I encourage everyone listening in, you know, even if you're considering starting a business, sales is going to be a really big, important part of what you do next. So check out hardcorecloser.com. And of course, look up Ryan on social media through that web URL that he just gave you guys. Ryan, thanks so much for being here today. Certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. And enjoy the live stream you got coming up next.
Thanks, Zeph. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Hey, everyone, it's Zeph. Did you like this episode? Be sure to subscribe so that you can tune in next week and tell a friend about the show. If you want access to free training and exclusive interviews on success, happiness, lifestyle design, and adventure, visit me at yearofpurpose.com. Until next time, go out and let life surprise you so that you can live a life rescripted.